Hey, welcome to the Total Bitcoin Podcast Show. My name is Keyvan Devani, the Total Connector. Really excited to have Danny Brewster, CEO and founder of Fast Bitcoin, on my show for the first time. It makes me happy. You know, there's more and more, I see more and more healthy competition amongst auto DCA providers, you know, where you can stack sats on a regular basis, you know, buy, sell, educate. And, you know, it's good that, you know, it's Bitcoin only. This is what we need, you know, the more ethos and a clear position, crystal clear position on where we stand. And yeah, so check him out. I'm going to put those in the show notes anyway, but check him out on Twitter. BTC Danny is his Twitter handle. You can also find Bitcoin Fast on Twitter too. And the website is fastbitcoins.com. So without further ado, this is my talk with Danny Brewster. And let me know what you think. Please retweet, share, subscribe, follow me. Whatever you do, it supports me in any shape or form. And yeah, talk to you soon. Welcome to the show, Danny Brewster.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for your time and coming to my show. It's really, I'm really amazed and fascinated by Fast Bitcoin. Okay, Danny, why don't you just briefly give a little bit of background on your path to Bitcoin? Because it's very interesting. I saw on Twitter that you were at that time in 2013 when, you know, the Cyprus bail-in started. Was it 2013, 14, around that time?
It's 13 when the bail-ins happened there. I was unfortunate enough to be there, living there in Larnaca when it all happened. On reflection, now I've probably spoken about it a couple of times, but the reality of the situation is it was an horrendous situation. The outside media made it out to be something that it wasn't, especially when it came to like the Bitcoin media. And I was in that bubble at that time, and maybe the media articles was giving myself like confirmation bias and things like that, that was in the perfect storm to launch a business in that environment, because this had just happened. And it, now on reflection, it was a terrible idea. And the actual situation wasn't what I believed at the time. I just thought, oh, the banks have just gambled away everybody's money, and they've taken all of these risks, and now everybody's got to pay for it. But the actual reality of the situation is the general population was borrowing money from the Cypriot banks to invest in Greek bonds, which all went bad. And then they all defaulted on their local debt in Cyprus, which created the problem. So this should have been maybe a bit more people acknowledging it, that it was their own behaviors in chasing those returns, because pretty much everybody drove a new Mercedes in Cyprus at that time based on the returns from these Greek bonds that was paying higher returns than what they was borrowing for in Cyprus and stuff. So but ultimately the banks did create the conditions and promote that idea to people that they could do this and it was sustainable and things like that. But that's only on reflection that I managed to learn that and understand that. But at that time I thought, great, we've got this perfect opportunity. People will be looking for something different. They've now witnessed people put their hands into their bank accounts and literally take money. They did change the original plan of taking 8% of everything over 1,000 euros to 50% of everything over 100,000 euros. So it did only impact those that held more wealth. But there was lots of businesses impacted and stuff like that, which was like large companies that was about to run payroll. If they had more than 100,000 in their accounts, then they got haircut and things like that. So it left companies struggling for payroll and stuff, which had obviously a compounding impact throughout the economy. But from the like Bitcoin and business wise, all of the news stories and things was pushing the idea that everybody in Cyprus is now running into Bitcoin because it's the perfect solution to that problem of confiscatable money. But it just wasn't the fact. When people are more concerned about how they're going to feed the family next week, the last thing that they're doing is buying Bitcoin. When they're queuing up for an ATM to take out their daily mandated at maximum of 100 euros or whatever it was, people aren't taking that cash and sticking it in a Bitcoin ATM. It just doesn't work like that in the real world. But at that time, I kind of got on board with the hubris, even though I see it and I was saying, like, it's not actually really like that here. But I did believe that that was a golden opportunity for Bitcoin. It probably could have been with somebody smarter than myself at the helm of a business or whatever at that time. But the idea was wrong. I compounded that by hiring the wrong people and it just exploded. I raised capital in the wrong way from within the community and things like that. So many compounded mistakes and it led to just 3 years of just basically negativity, fighting through courts and things like that, all whilst remaining silent to clear my name of what I'd been accused of and things, through the legal processes, which I'm glad to say all came to an end. And some positive came out of it because I retaught myself how to code and essentially built Fast Bitcoins whilst all that was going on, as a means for not allowing it to break me. So,
fascinating story. I mean, entrepreneurship, it ain't easy.
No, absolutely. But anything good in this world doesn't seem to be worth it if it's not hard to obtain or achieve.
So that was 2013. Now we got 2020. We are in an unprecedented, what do you want to call it? Like, I mean, the economy decimating era. What has changed, you know, also perception wise, especially when it comes to merchants, businesses, you know, what's your perception? In regard to Bitcoin, of course. Yeah.
I still think we're far too early. It's still such a niche, but it's very easy to become a hype man. Bitcoin's here, Bitcoin's perfect, it's going to solve every single problem. And there's so many people that kind of wish that we could just wake up tomorrow in a Bitcoin world. And then, whereas for me, that would create so much more suffering, and if there was a total financial collapse, it's not something that we should really cheerlead. I'm much more, I've got kids and things like that, we'll be fine, we've got Bitcoin. But then you also, do you really want to be one of the few haves in a world of have-nots? That kind of makes you put, well, it increases the risk and things like that. And people talk about OPSEC and things like that. But that takes it onto a whole nother level. If you've got 7+ billion people that have nothing, and you're one of the handful of people that actually has some wealth and power and value and stored value, you just become a target. So I'd much rather see more of an orderly demise of the system, and I think that they've definitely started that now. As more people become aware of the fact that, yeah, they can just create this money on a database, and it's got, I do think it will take a few months before we start seeing that trickle down and the inflation starts to kick in at the consumer's edge in a few months when people's grocery shopping starts costing more and more and more, because otherwise the layman really doesn't understand. They really don't care. And I think that's a huge problem. But it's an educational one.
Yeah. Yeah, you're so right on this. I mean, I always have to remind myself we're so early. It's you know, the comprehension process and understanding, you know, just a fundamental question: what is money? Where does it come from? How is it created? What's the root causes of all the symptoms? But do you see, like, because I'm based in Austria, in Vienna, or sometimes in some other city with my girlfriend, and there, I mean, there seems to be like a wake up process taking place, and there are some, you know, business people, merchants say, you know, I would definitely be willing to offer my customers an alternative opt-in, whatever, you know, payment infrastructure. But I don't have the time. I mean, people just, you know, even my girlfriend, she has a business, she has a company, she works literally every day, but she says she would love to. She would even give her customers 5 to 10% or whatever in that range, a discount, so that people would start, you know, at least incrementally, just start, you know, with an easy, smooth, user-friendly interface application, just do a little bit trading, all right? Where do you see this process going? I mean, what's your position on this?
It's very much chicken and egg. In 2013, 2014, in Cyprus, we was literally 2 weeks away. The board was on board with it, of the McDonald's restaurants in Cyprus. Was literally, we had 4 of the 5 directors on board with, because we had created like a POS device then, for like a chip and pin card to manage your multi-sig wallet that was held by the or with the company. So we'd created this payment network as well alongside the main exchange type business. And it was far too early. We didn't have Lightning or anything like that then. It was a very short-sighted, really. Kind of understood that fees would have to go up. But at that time, this was pre all of the scaling wars and all of the drama that went on, that event, like, ultimately has, we've been through that, and we'll probably go through something similar again in the future when it comes to privacy. But the whole idea of like merchants and stuff, now we've got Lightning, I think Lightning's even earlier. It's only what, just over a year and a half since the network launched and stuff. Screen.
Yeah, just showing, yeah, in the background, the fact. It was really liked your the simple, you know, explanation of what it does, you know, and what's the value.
Yesterday. We're just going through a soft launch with it just to make sure everything's great before we push out with all of the related marketing and stuff. So so for me, getting merchants to accept Bitcoin is a noble cause, but they're just not actually going to see very much usage, and it's very easy for them to lose hope or faith or trust in the ideas that everybody's going to start paying them in Bitcoin, or they'll benefit greatly if they start accepting Bitcoin. Earlier on, in like 2013, 2014, if a big company started accepting it, it was big news. Or if something new came about, it hit the news and there was a huge beneficial PR boost to any company that started accepting Bitcoin. But then you've also got when you're in the midst of the hype bubbles, as I like to call them, like in 2017, as soon as you add blockchain or change your business name, it pumps the share price, and it was just sickening. It's just how far and how detached reality come from or how far we became detached from reality in like the financial sector and space. And as somebody that's been through a couple of these cycles, I've just like banging my head against the brick wall, and it very much provides confirmation that we don't learn from history. We don't learn from previous mistakes on the whole. Which is a little bit disheartening, but
Yeah, my history treated always told me is like it would be too good to be true if people learned out of history. But you know, I think we're starting to learn.
Well, we always say that. That's the thing. we're smarter today than we were yesterday, so we will learn from those mistakes. But they just seem to repeat and repeat. It's probably going to be the same with money, and that's also probably longer term. One of my concerns with Bitcoin is we all understand how important those rules are, those consensus rules. And is that same emphasis of those rules going to be as strong in 50 years, in 100 years, as what it is today, as close to that initial creation? And are they going to get distorted over time? Is it, we just need to change this one rule? Does that quickly become, we can just change another one because we changed that one and it was fine? Is it going to fall into the same trappings of fiat currencies that was on the gold standard and things like that? But that's more of a philosophical, longer term question for Bitcoin.
Right. You know, the main concern of, let me go back to the merchant. The main concern of the merchant, also when I talk to my girlfriend, she says her main concern, the most important thing is that it's got to be integratable. Like it's got to be integrated into the, what do you call it? Like cashier system, accounting system, also because of tax reasons. So, how would you pitch that? I mean,
see, the thing for me is back to the whole chicken and egg point. It's, our business model, basically, I added payment processing on our POS device as a side project, as something that was just fun to build. It's useful as well if you've got merchants that accept, if want to accept it. Our back end basically enables them to convert a portion of it into fiat currency to have it delivered to their bank account, or they can retain it all in Bitcoin. It's on a sliding scale, basically. So that's the whole, how do they cover their costs and stuff, but they can retain some of or their profits or a percentage of their profits of any trade, of any payment that's processed and stuff. But that's, for us, it's all just a side, it's just like an additional bolt-on that we can make available to the merchants. The key aspect of our business is basically turning their location into a physical place where somebody can go and purchase or get access to our services through our device that we provide them. We do have the ability to integrate into existing POS solutions and things, but for the most part, we have our own handheld device which produces the vouchers that we offer. And it also basically enables our users to sell Bitcoins to us and collect cash from their locations. So it just handles all of those functions, and it prints an end of day report every day and shows what money they've taken in or paid out and everything. So from an accounting perspective, it's no different to selling or buying and selling another product like a prepaid voucher, like cell phone minutes and things. So we've tried to ensure that those headaches aren't felt by the merchant. All they do is literally just selling another product, and the payment processing is exactly the same as if they had taken a credit card payment.
Right. So why don't you? What about the KYC process? I mean, is there a threshold for a KYC or?
Before there was, and before I'm by referencing before, I mean before the Fifth Money Laundering Directive came into effect, we had thresholds where we would enable people to buy and access Bitcoin without having to go through the KYC process. They did have to provide some identifying information to us, but not like full on government overlord intervention. KYC processes, which we've had to add If we want to stay in business, we've had to do that, and we have to jump through the regulatory holes. Ultimately, all we can do is promote best practices. So once you've actually bought your Bitcoin, take your privacy seriously. Self-custody those funds. We never hold users' Bitcoins. We literally sell them and deliver them to them. And the ideas of or education around what to do once you've actually bought your Bitcoin, how to store it, where to store it, how to get it onto that storage is where we as a company should be focusing education on, just so we can promote best practices and things like that. The KYC burden has arrived. I don't support it, or I'm not a proponent of it, but I'm a realist, and it's, if we want to have a business, we've got to do it. I'm not going to jail to sell somebody £20 worth of Bitcoin, because the people that are quick to shout you down for implementing these things wouldn't feed my family. You have to do what you have to do. But we can stick to our guns and promote best practices.
Yeah. You know, what's important to, let's say, to certain branches, you know, for example, if you have, let's say, a legal grow shop, you know, in Austria. So it's important for the customers. They usually, you know, they pay in cash, you know, so still, you know, it's not something illegal, but it just, you know, they just want to, you know, stay anonymous, as private and anonymous actually as possible, and they pay cash. So if it should come eventually to that stage where, you know, people have the opportunity to, you know, just have the QR code, you know, scanned, and they pay, the transaction's completed instantaneously, easy, smooth, and user-friendly. What about the privacy aspect? I mean, how can we guarantee that or you know, enhance the privacy features?
From a technological perspective, there are far greater people to discuss that with than me. There is some privacy benefits to using Lightning and things like that. Taproot, which we should hopefully see in the not too distant future, will increase the privacy on with Lightning a little bit further, and also increase the capacity of on-chain transactions, especially for larger, like multi-sig transactions, like Lightning channel opening and closing transactions will all appear the same on the actual network. There's things like that, and then there's like wallets when it comes to like fingerprinting and stuff like that. Maybe the developers can, or the wallet developers can pay it or do more to prevent or to aid against like wallet fingerprinting and stuff. But from for like the end user, it's a sliding scale privacy, really, especially for the end user. You can go full on 100% ninja with the way in which you buy your Bitcoin. If you're willing to, take the risks of meeting some strange fellow in a car park, pay with cash that you've managed to acquire, that you've not taken out of a bank, that you've managed to acquire through offering goods and services and things like that. So it's truly untraceable cash. So all the way down to like the granularity of the banknotes and the serial numbers on the banknotes that you use to buy those Bitcoins with, all the way through to using some KYC exchange, which unfortunately we are now, and things. So then you've obviously got your on-chain. Do you put them through a coin join before you pay and things like this? It's something that people should look into and do, like, I don't know, it's a cliche, but do your own research and just always understand that it's a sliding scale and nothing is perfect 100% of the time.
Right. So let's go back to Fast Bitcoin. I like the, you know, the very simple overview. Like when a average person like comes on your page, what do you think is the instantaneous, like somebody who's never like really has anything to do with Bitcoin, like how do you pitch this to the average user or merchant?
The pitch to the merchant is very different to the pitch to the end user. Fast Bitcoin merchants are basically, they're just looking to generate additional revenues for their business, and they do that through installing our point of sale device solution. It is literally a credit card sized reader. And then the end user is somebody that is literally like searching how to buy Bitcoin or how to get Bitcoins fast or everything like that. So the merchants is a completely different aspect of the business. That's business to business sales. They don't even need to understand or have any inkling of what Bitcoin is or how it works to offer our services. And we've got some merchants that earn upwards of like £2,000 a month in additional revenues just by offering our services, which is great for them. And especially in this coming climate where retail could be impacted even more, then should hopefully be able to help and generate additional revenues for them. The end user, it's 100%, I just want to buy some Bitcoin. And the way that which they can do that with us is they can go to one of the locations, buy a voucher. There's actually one box missing from there, which we are literally completing over these next 2 days, just waiting for some video content, which basically goes through the whole how it works process. Because the old video content that we have was waiting on the new site to be completed. But we've added things like dollar cost averaging and stuff like that.
Oh, that's great. I was just going to ask you that about RDDCA because we're all into RDDCA. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got DCA, but we've also added a drip feature. So basically, if you have, say, a £100 voucher or $100 voucher, you can redeem that and it'll just basically chop it up and execute a delivery every 10 minutes, an order every 10 minutes for 24 hours. So it just basically stretches. It's like a dollar cost averaging on steroids, basically to average out your buy throughout the day.
That's amazing. Yeah. So in essence, like this terminal, right? This is I don't see a picture of the terminal, but that's essentially that this terminal that the merchants receive. Oh yeah, there it is. Let me get out of here.
That is literally one of those.
Nice, slick.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the device itself. Basically, it just sits on the countertop, and then when any of the users or customers come through the door, they pretty much know what they're asking for. The merchant literally just enters the information, like the amount of the voucher, clicks print, prints it, we confirm that it's printed and stuff, then they activate the voucher once they've received the payment, job done.
And that's it, right?
Yeah.
Right. Where are you guys located? I mean, where does your business expand, like all of European Union or?
We are just adding electronic deposit methods, so people will be able to deposit with us via bank account as well. In Europe, the UK, Canada, and we are just going through the registration process with AUSTRAC in Australia, and we'll also be covered in the EU. Right now, we've got locations, like physical locations, merchants that have got our hardware sat in the stores in the UK, or say all across the UK, Canada, Latvia, Estonia, we've got the first location in Germany that's just signed up. As I say, Australia is coming online too. We've got hardware on the ground in Uganda as well, and going into Togo, Ghana, and Madagascar. And then we're also looking at like South Korea, Japan, towards the end of this year, which may have been pushed back because of this virus issue. So we'll see if that's quarter four this year or quarter one next year for Southeast Asia. So the network is growing, and as I say, we're adding electronic deposits as well. So hopefully we can get even more people using Bitcoin that way. But I always want to maintain both the cash focus network and the electronic side of things as well.
Sounds simple. So can you like talk about like what countries like demographically would be interested? Where's the most traction, like demographically, country wise?
We have a clear pattern of how our users use our service. They start with like a £10 or a €10 voucher, just try it, see if it works, and everything. And then they steadily grow that over time. And we have a customer retention rate of above 87%. So once you've used us once, they generally use us more than once. And but that was pre-COVID, pre-Fifth Money Laundering Directive. So it remains to be seen just what kind of impact all of these changes are going to have on us going forward. The demographic of user is so varied. And that's one of the things like with Bitcoin. I actually tweeted about this yesterday. I recorded a podcast with somebody called Zuby. I don't know if you know who they are. He's a British rapper, podcaster, quite popular. After 9 years of being in this space, I still struggle to find the best way to describe what Bitcoin is and how it can benefit the world and what have you, without selling people on false ideals and false ideas. So I tweeted about it yesterday. Somebody commented, the first thing someone said, described it as, was unhackable, which again leads me to bang my head against a brick wall. History has shown us that it's not unhackable. Bugs do exist and they do occur and they can cause some rather large headaches. And to have the ignorance that we'll have no bugs ever again going into the future is just remarkably arrogant. So I'd never try and sell it to somebody on those, it's perfectly safe. It's unhackable. Like there's never going to be any problems with it. I would never personally do that. And then how do you describe it? Because for some people, it's a censorship-resistant electronic version of cash. For some people, it's a censorship-resistant store of value. For some people, it's just a hedge against inflation, especially if you're in a country that's like regularly used, like Argentina and places like that, Zimbabwe, where people have actually lived through like hyperinflationary events and stuff, Venezuela. There is no perfect way of describing. I think, like I said in the tweet, I should probably improve my communication skills, maybe ask questions of them first. And then if all else fails, just tell people that orange coin good, number go up. If you're just going to measure your wealth in your local currency, and you just want to increase the amount of dollars or pounds or euros or whatever, then it's great. It can be great for that as well. But so can gambling on the football and the dogs. And I don't know.
Right. So what's the roadmap for Fast Bitcoin? Have you, like, for example, if there are more like more intermediate and advanced users, can they connect to their full node, or
there's no need because we're not a wallet. So because to buy from us, you've got to provide us with a delivery address. So that is like essentially linking it to your full node if your wallet is on your full node and stuff. So as soon as you literally provide your delivery address, you essentially, that's our link across the Bitcoin network to your wallet. We don't want people's information. We don't want more information from people than we need. We're not in the data mining business or anything. We're in the business of trying to put Bitcoin into as many people's pockets as possible. And the roadmap for the long term is to hopefully grow out both sides of our business, the electronic payments and like the electronic deposits, and also the cash network or the retail network, and basically hopefully put enough locations as close to as many people as possible, so people don't have to by default look up to see if they've got a location near them. They can just understand that they've got a Fast Bitcoin's location near them. I think we've got some great branding, we've got a great domain name, and we are seeing like high retention numbers when it comes to users. So hopefully just continue growing and expanding the networks.
Yeah, I really love the ethos behind the philosophy behind your company. First of all, it's, you know, Bitcoin only. And I mean, if we look at all those, you know, platforms, exchanges with all the shit coins. And so that's why, you know, after talking to Nish, it's, I just love the concept and philosophy and ethos behind it, and the simplicity. You know, it looks simple, and I think that's what people need, you know, because they don't have the time, you know, to do all this, you know, listen to all these podcasts, and it's all, most of it's English, and, you know, it's just so many obstacles, you know.
Yeah.
Technical, but like language-wise, and yeah.
So we are going to be adding like better localization. It's just right now most of our initial growth plan, we're completely bootstrapped. We haven't done a round of funding or anything like that, which may change in the future. But the idea was to grow into the English language markets first. It gives us a footprint to truly establish ourselves. But now, as I say, we're looking at like Asia and things like that. We have got literally like localization is ready to go. So we will have complete translations of everything, including all the video content and things that we're making. So yeah, that is, it's all, it all takes time. And as a business, I'd love to, or just as a, and I'd love to see other people doing the same sort of thing and building, and there's no competition yet really, because the pie is so big. And what you could deem as competition have so many flaws. Like, as you say, like with all the shit coins and things like that, I think it's great that like CoinFloor in the UK have gone with their no BS approach and stuff.
Yeah,
I'm good friends with him. Yeah, I listened to Andy's interview. I'm good friends with Obi, really respect him, quite thankful to him for advice and stuff as well. like just watching his and CoinFloor's transition into becoming Bitcoin only and things has been great to watch, and it's something that I can't wait to see more happening into the future. So yeah, like localization will be coming for all of these different markets and stuff, but we, as I say, we only have so much time and resources and things like that. So I'd absolutely love to see more people building and growing businesses and stuff. So
Yeah, it takes time to process. But, you know, what makes me happy is that more and more people around me, just personally, from my personal observation, but also from others, people's encounters, people are waking up. I'm getting literally calls from people I've never heard of in years. And, you know, whatever, worried about stock market or, you know, inflation or what. And so they're starting to ask questions at least. And that's great, you know.
Yeah. Valid they are, I think it's the Myers-Briggs concept of N-type and S-type personalities. I think, yeah, people, we do need more inquisitive types to start asking questions about the reality of the situation and how it all how it's all going to continue to work into the future. Maybe this time, the whole money printing issue isn't going to be the one that brings it down, but by nature, it's going to need it again. Maybe they've got one more rodeo, maybe not. But all we can, like I said, all we can do is continue building and improving every aspect of what we have for that moment, for when it's needed. Because right now, we couldn't handle a catastrophic event in global finance, and then everybody making a dart for Bitcoin. All the biggest exchanges freeze up still, even 8 years after Mt. Gox's fiasco with delayed trades and lag and things like that. You would think that trust. I do understand there's been improvements, massive improvements since then, but it's still not quite there. Even us as a business, we couldn't scale right now to 100 million users and service them all with no headaches and no issues. It's just the reality of the situation. But all we can do is continue working towards being able to do that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just want people to build.
Curious what's your thoughts, like recently Paul Tudor Jones, you know, other market macro investors, Dan DePiero, Raul Paul, all these, you know, macro investors in this space who are allegedly, you know, real established and famous and have a name and reputation, like they understand Bitcoin. Like if more and more of these you know, macro investors, family offices, hedge fund, even pension fund, maybe the, you know, laws will be loosened and pension funds will be finally able to allocate a little bit more percentages to Bitcoin. Do you see this coming?
I really enjoy listening to Raoul Paul. He gets it. The Paul Tudor Jones one, I am pretty sure he hasn't booted up a cold card, bought some Bitcoin and stored it and self-custodied it. It's just like the gold bugs that buy paper gold. Unless you've got that gold in your hand, it's not your gold. So I've never really been a big proponent of getting Wall Street into Bitcoin per se. I'm much more personally and ideologically driven around the end user. But that's not me saying Wall Street isn't welcome. Who am I to say who can and can't use Bitcoin? It's permissionless. Like, Wall Street doesn't need anybody's permission to come and try and financialize or use or apply their existing tools and frameworks and ideas of how markets and everything should work. I'm more personally interested in the farmer down the road selling me some potatoes or whatever for Satoshis, or him buying some Bitcoin to store a little bit because he knows that inflation is coming down the road and things like that. So great. The more people that that are using it in some form is hopefully going to drive additional interest into the space. I think, and we'll see it with the next FOMO spike, with all of the media hype and everything, that most people are just looking to make a quick buck, get in, get out, before the greed sets in, and stuff. So I'd much rather have people that are buying it from a more informed position, other than number go up. But I do fully understand that there's a need for those types of speculators and gamblers and what have you in the market. They provide liquidity, and they can drive some of the interest and stuff, which does bring more people that are looking to get more informed and more understanding, and essentially better hodlers into the space.
Yeah, now we're on the same page, Danny. It's just, you know, I think the fundamental monetary properties, understanding of fundamental monetary properties is so important. You know, the absolute scarcity, the difficulty adjustment, the predetermined supply schedule, and that volatility is part of the price formation. You know, it's we are 11 years in, and it's part of the monetary evolution. And just understanding the potential of an increasing value appreciating, purchasing power appreciating money for the first time in human history, it's just amazing. I mean, we're really literally going into deflationary economy if that trend continues, into circle economies, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, the thing for me is we just don't, the vast majority of people don't understand it. For me, when you actually look at the core principles of Bitcoin as money, it's a no-brainer. For me, maybe it's on the, maybe I expect too much of other people. And trust me, this whole COVID lockdown, the social experiment that it is, looking on from the outside, at other people's behaviors and stuff, has kind of set my faith in humans back by quite some margin. But yeah, for me, it's an absolute no-brainer, especially when you're measuring that value against something that is just created, and created at will, and is targeted to create more. It's just part of the design of it. It's something that's absolutely scarce. Compared to that, it's the most no-brainer position ever. But then also, I've witnessed it myself. Part of the ideals for me is that I'm not one for shouting about climate change and stuff like that. But for me, it's also common sense that we should tread as lightly as possible on the planet, as what we should. I couldn't really care less about the arguments into CO2 levels and stuff like that. But
it's a science issue. But anyway, you know.
Like, for me, like, it's not even that. It's a case of if I'm using less resources in the world, the better. So Bitcoin for me has taught me, buy that more crafted, longer lasting piece of furniture over the cheap throwaway piece of furniture. I'd much rather get 15 years out of a cabinet than 3 years of moving twice and having to take it down and put it up and it's just broken. My time preference has expanded so much since discovering Bitcoin. And it's things like that is where, for me, the world will probably become a better place. It's like externalities of what Bitcoin would enable. It is probably, for me, doesn't get spoken about enough.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So before we wrap up, Danny, you know, I want to make we want to do probably with the incorporation with Bitcoin Austria. It's a nonprofit organization. Like, more and more information workshops, really, like, you know, just the fundamental questions on what is money and what is possible, technical possibilities, and how would you direct, like, the potential, you know, open-minded users, merchants? What's the roadmap? Or do you want to like give any final thoughts?
I think if they truly want to understand Bitcoin, it's just consume information, but consume information from all sides, including the naysayers. Try not to get into a bubble. Don't there's it's very easy to fall into a world of just confirmation bias, and it can lead people down the wrong path, and then they get false hopes, and then they'll lose all hope when that future that they thought they could foresee doesn't pan out. I'm pretty sure that some of my understandings of Bitcoin and everything is wrong, but I'm human. I have the right to be wrong. So it's just education. We've tried to be as open as we can with our What is Bitcoin section. It's separated on tabs, and then at the end there's like much more more resources available just through the links on there and stuff. Like Jameson locks his lock.net/Bitcoin .html page is just absolutely a gold mine. The Nakamoto Institute as well. That's another gold mine of information. So it's just like anything, isn't it? It's like becoming the most informed version that you can on the subject. One thing I would say is if you're new, you're not going to know how to fix Bitcoin within 3 days of discovering it.
Yeah, it's a deep, deep rabbit hole. Yeah.
Yeah.
So any other, I'm going to put your site on the show notes. Any other resources or tips or information you want to share?
If you just go back to the homepage of the site, one thing that people will notice is that we have SATS mode on now by default. So, So our pricing mechanisms is basically by default in Satoshis. If you're still old school, you can get the full Bitcoin value. But the What is Bitcoin page is probably our best effort so far of providing information on what Bitcoin is and stuff. We've got all of the social media channels, like Bitcoin's Faster and stuff. We're on Facebook and also Instagram. And then there's myself, BTC Danny. Don't listen to too much what I say. I'm a dum-dum. But yeah, anybody wants to ask any questions or anything, I'm pretty available. Even if there is a bit of a delay in getting back to you, it's only because I'm busy. But I will try and get back to most people.
Really enjoyed this talk, Danny. Thanks so much. Too. Hope we can repeat this in the future, maybe in a panel discussion, whatever. And
yeah, absolutely. Always available.
All right.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Talk to you. Have a good, great day. Bye.
Hey, I really enjoyed this talk with Danny Brewsters, CEO of Fast Bitcoin. I really love the ethos again, you know, their philosophy, their concept, their business model, the simplicity of it, you know, and the educational approach and the tools they have available also, and the links and tools they have on the website. It's really great. It's a Bitcoin only, really ethical Bitcoin company trying, you know, to deliver value to users, merchants, you know, whoever wants to even auto, you know, the stack sats, auto DCA. So yeah, really appreciate for listening. Please subscribe, follow me. It would help me enormously. Thanks so much for your support, for listening. Retweet it, you know, share it, whatever you do, leave me a positive review, and hope we can do this again. If you're neutral, let me know your questions. My email address is hello@thetotalconnector.com, and you can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Telegram. It's all in the show notes. Thanks so much. Have a great day.